With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hey there, everyone. Welcome back to another Sunday night edition of the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Harris. And with me, as always, is Mike Tagliere. You can find us on Twitter at DanHarris80 and at Mike Tagliere NFL Tags. How you doing, buddy?
Oh, man, I've had better days. For whatever reason, I am like dragging butt right now. And it's gotten worse as the day's gone on, like body aches and stuff. So I hope I'm not getting sick. It always seems to happen in football season. And some people have told me because it's related to stress. And that's not going to end. So, I mean, we have to figure out a way around this. So, I'm here for the podcast. That's all we can ask for and, ready to talk some football.
Man, if I heard that, oh, I'm sick, I can't really give great analysis excuse, you know, one more time, then I'm just really not going to be able to keep going with this. But I mean, that's fine. I get it. Now, listen, we've gotten some pretty awesome feedback, on this show since we started the Sunday night podcast. We really appreciate it. So in exchange, and especially since Tags is under the weather, I'm going to give you guys a little peek behind the curtain. I was originally set to miss this episode. I am at a wedding in New York, which we booked a long time ago. But I'm going to be honest with you guys. I do not love this wedding. None of the appetizers are wrapped in bacon. The ceremony was 76 minutes long. And I'm legitimately at the same table as my ex-girlfriend.
Oh,
it's bad, dude. I'm not kidding. In the pantheon of weddings, this has got to take the cake as the worst. So here's what I've done. I've locked myself in some sort of closet. It might be a bathroom, or I don't really know what this is, but I have my mic. I've got my headphones, and we are going to deliver some really quality fantasy football analysis. But Tags certainly will. At least I've had to give six toasts, so I'm kind of a hot mess. But let's just get right into it right off the bat. Tags, biggest takeaway to the extent you are able to coherently put together a sentence.
That Blake Bortles is still just as bad as everybody thought. I mean, I watched a lot of that game. Ben Roethlisberger is still playing really bad. That could be another one. I know the stat line in the end looks pretty good, but Blake Bortles was terrible. Like, there is no ways to disguise it. It's not that he ran into a good defense. He just is terrible. He has no touch on his passes. It's just bad. I mean, don't ever trust Blake Bortles. I told Bobby that on the DFS podcast. I was like, don't do it, man. And he's just like, no, he's too cheap not to use. And I know he turned out with like a decent fantasy performance because he got some garbage time and he threw for over 400 yards, but he turned the ball over five times and he's just not very good, man. Like, I'm curious to see what Jacksonville does at quarterback.
They're not good fantasy numbers, but he does throw for 430 yards. He does throw the touchdowns. He does throw four picks, including the pick six. Never gave Jacksonville a chance to win. And obviously, I look forward to Bobby once again touting how he's the number one quarterback or something over the last 10 games or whatever he loves to do. Blake Bortles is a terrible quarterback. And when you're Jacksonville, you're just in this horrible position, right? Because you've got a championship caliber defense and you've just got absolutely nothing at the quarterback position. And you might be able to get away with it as they did last year, and they almost won against the Patriots in the playoffs. But realistically, you know,
the thing is like, I'm in the exact opposite situation, right? Like, I like Amari Cooper and he just sucks because he's not getting opportunity. Blake Bortles is getting all the opportunity that he could possibly handle. Meanwhile, Amari Cooper gets one target. And, you know, before people come at me and say, I told you Amari Cooper sucks, blah, blah, there were so many people telling me that Jared Cook was like a great play this week. And I'm like, do you really want to trust Derek Carr? And nobody wanted to listen to me. Like, oh, he's been great. No, he's been up and down. This is what Jared Cook has done throughout his entire career. So what makes you think this is going to be any different? Derek Carr is just, he's a very inconsistent quarterback. And whenever I say that, I have people combat me and say, you know, he was in the running for the MVP a couple of years back. And I'm not going to say he didn't have a good year, but he's always been an inconsistent quarterback, and it's continued into this new offense. It's not clicking, man. And that's the thing, is like, don't hate every player because they have a bad game, especially one who sees one target. Like, what was he supposed to do? He caught the only target that came his way. But I mean, the bottom line here is you cannot trust Amari Cooper on a weekly basis.
Yeah, we're going to do winners and losers again. He was obviously my loser. I didn't get to watch much of the game. Was he shadowed by Casey Hayward? And Carr just completely avoids him then. That's the deal?
Casey Hayward's a fine cornerback, but he's not as talented as Amari Cooper. Like, I stand by that. And that was my reason for saying that Amari was a good tournament play this week in DFS, because if you look at what Casey Hayward has allowed in coverage to this point, he hasn't been good this year. Amari Cooper, when he's targeted, is very good. It's just Derek Carr decides to avoid him and throws him one target. Like, legitimately, he had one more target than I had today.
Right. No, I mean, that's the thing. It's when you look at his line, you're like, boy, that's terrible. He had one target, which he caught, by the way, obviously, but that's the bottom line. He can't do anything if Derek Carr is not going to, for whatever reason, take chance. And I haven't watched it, so I'm not really sure. But if he's just not going to take the chances, I don't know what you're supposed to do. And again, saying that we don't want to start Amari Cooper or anything like that, it's not, you know, we're not saying anything about his talent necessarily, but I just don't know what you're supposed to do with this offense. Because frankly, yeah, a guy like Cooper obviously needs certainly more work, and I'm sure next game he's going to completely blow up, because that's apparently what he does at this point. But it's really ridiculous. We'll get to a little biggest winners and losers, but before we kept going, I do want to briefly mention our latest giveaway, because it's pretty awesome. We're giving away a signed Davante Adams Packers helmet, and what I particularly love about this one, and Tags, you and I talked about it, it has the black visor, which not only looks amazing, but it's also what Adams usually wears during the games. So it's a really, really cool product. You can submit an entry in 30 seconds just by going to fantasypros.com/contest. Now, like all our signed giveaways, this one comes from Pristine Auction. And you've heard me talk about Pristine Auction a few times already, and that's because they're awesome. Pristine Auction has hundreds of auctions that end every day. And if it's being auctioned off on the site, then it is guaranteed authentic from only the most trusted sources. And I get it. Some people think, oh, I don't want to really pay to join a site. I don't know what I want to bid on or how much I want to bid. I get that. It's free to register. It's free to bid. You literally only pay something if you walk away with the merchandise. And when you look at some of the prices that some of these items go for, it's preposterous. Just yesterday, I saw a signed Stephon Diggs Vikings jersey go for $71.25. A Corey Davis signed Titans jersey for $55.28. And if you're like me, you're a little old school, you like maybe some of the older players, not that old, one of my favorite players, Hines Ward, there's a signed Hines Ward football that went for $59.87. So if you're a fan of memorabilia, football, or really any sport, then there's really no better place to go than pristineauction.com. That's PRISTINE.com. And there's a how did you hear about a section, which I mention every week, and just make sure you tell them that you heard about them from Fantasy Pros so that we can keep doing things like the Davante Adams helmet giveaway. All right, Tag, so let's go straight. No more movie lines, frankly. I don't have enough in me right now, so let's just do biggest winner of the day. Who do you have?
Biggest winner of the day, Valdez-Scantling, the Packers. I think he solidified his role in the offense, and the thing is like, he played well enough to the point where I think they're going to play it safe with Randall Cobb. Randall Cobb has said he's never dealt with an injury like this before. He thinks that he'll be ready for next week, but he can't guarantee it. They don't play until Monday night, so there's some risk there, and then they have their bye week after that in week 7, so I think Randall Cobb misses another week, and I think Scantling turns out to be a fine, you know, wide receiver 3, wide receiver 4 play again next week. So he's definitely a winner. It's like, the thing is with Aaron Rodgers, like, watching that game, Aaron Rodgers wasn't even very good this week. Like, I'm the first one to say it. Like, he looked bad for the first, I'd say, 3/4 of it. Like, he made a comeback at the end of the game, and Mason Crosby made it to, he missed 5 field goals. I know you probably didn't see that. You might have seen it on Twitter or something, but he missed 5 field goals. 4 field goals and 1 extra point. And it was just like literally the worst day of his life. Immediately after he kicked every ball, it was like he put his hands up on his helmet. Like, what just happened? So, man, I don't know if they're going to have much faith in him going forward. But Scantling definitely earned some trust from Aaron Rodgers today.
You know, I'm surprised, honestly, to hear you say that, because when I was looking at the Packers game, and again, I didn't watch it very closely, but I figured probably his production was more based on the fact that Geronimo Allison didn't play in the game as opposed to Randall Cobb. But you think even if Allison comes back, and again, it was a concussion, so I think we can probably assume, you can never fully assume with a head injury, but we can assume that he's coming back. You think even then he's going to have a role?
Well, Allison, so that's the thing, is Allison's going to come back and play on the perimeter, and they're going to stick Scantling in the slot role that's normally occupied by Randall Cobb, which, I mean, the Packers run three wide receiver sets more often than most teams, so he will be on the field. Geronimo Allison, the thing with him is, yes, he's dealing with the concussion protocol, but he was also put on their injury report with a hamstring injury, which, obviously, those are touch and go, and there's no such thing as a mild hamstring injury. So, I mean, there's risk between both those players, and Scantling, obviously, has proven, like, he is the next man up.
All right, that's definitely fair. I was honestly wondering, because Cobb missed last week as well too, and you know, he didn't have that big a game, so I was kind of willing to write it off. But again, I haven't gone back. I'm going to watch on NFL Game Pass tomorrow all the games and just sort of take a look, but I'll definitely take a closer look, because I was honestly assuming that his production came largely from the fact that essentially Aaron Rodgers would, without anybody else to throw the ball to other than Devontae Adams. How about your biggest loser tags, unless it's Amari Cooper, who we've already talked about?
Yeah, Amari Cooper was definitely atop my list, but I mean, if you want to do another one, I think Carlos Hyde could be on that list. I mean, it was a tough matchup against Baltimore, but I really do believe that he's on a short leash. I don't think that Carlos Hyde is going to finish this year as a starter if he has a week like this, where it's just like very mediocre. He hasn't been like dominant. He's played his role very well. Like, I think he's done everything they've asked him to do. But the thing is like, we're starting to see a downward trend in production. And we obviously saw Nick Chubb run for 2 touchdowns last week. This week, he didn't do anything. But I think the fact that he struggled at all, it's like, it reminds me of like Ryan Fitzpatrick, you know? I said, as soon as this guy struggles, they're going to start to turn the page. Like, they're going to move on. Carlos Hyde's a rental player for them. He's basically on a 1-year deal. They can cut him after this year. So, I don't know, man. I think he's a loser for me, definitely.
Man, I love these takes, because frankly, I was not expect, if there would be, you know, if I had 20 choices, Carlos Hyde would not be somebody who I would expect to put on there. 17 carries for 63 yards plus 2 catches. Chubb saw just 3 carries, had 2 yards. I mean, I think the way I kind of view it is the Browns are, I mean, they could obviously have a much better record than they have right now, but they're in the mix basically right now, and they're winning, and Mayfield gives them a chance. And I just can't really see them turning it over to Chubb, at least at that point, until they really start falling out of it. And I'm not convinced that that's necessarily going to happen anytime really soon in that sense. So I would think that Hyde has a bigger leash. And again, he wasn't terrible today. He did average under 4 yards per carry. But, you know, in the end, I was surprised. I thought, given his workload, you know, not that he would be a winner, but I'm surprised he's a loser. So I'm feeling what you're bringing today, Tags. I like it. You're surprising me with some of these takes.
Well, that's the thing, is like, there's been 5 games, obviously, this year. He's averaged 3.7 or fewer yards per carry in 4 of them. He's been very mediocre. I mean, the only game that he did well was the one against the Jets, where he broke a couple long runs, and it worked out. But I just, like I said, I don't think they draft Nick Chubb if they were really happy with Carlos Hyde.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Okay, let's move on then to some of the game recaps. Obviously, as always, we'll touch on the Thursday night game. Patriots 38, Colts 24. Kudos to the Colts and Andrew Luck, who kept it a lot closer than kind of anybody expected, considering there was nobody to throw the ball to. But let's start on the winning side, and let me just quickly ask you about Josh Gordon. I mean, he catches the touchdown, but he obviously wasn't all that involved. Are you encouraged by the fact that he kind of had a broken play touchdown catch into double coverage, or?
It's a mixed review for me, because he only played 18 snaps again. So, you know, when you talk about like barely involved, some people might like, oh, he just didn't get targeted this game. No, he didn't play the snaps again. Like, the thing is like, he's played 18 snaps in back-to-back games. That's an issue, because you're not going to produce consistently with that. However, the good news is that Tom Brady like legitimately showed that he trusted him, because he saw that Josh Gordon was in double coverage and he was like in trouble. So he's just like, you know what, I'm gonna chuck it up and see what happens. And obviously Josh Gordon made him look really smart to do that, because he just like, it was almost like he hit a little turbo button. Like, when you've seen it from the angle from like Tom Brady's view, and you saw, it's like, okay, this ball's coming in. You see the 2 Jets corners, or the one corner and the one safety like closing in. And then you saw Gordon just like boost through them, and he just made it look so easy. And that's what Josh Gordon does. He's like a physical freak. I'd love to see him more involved. I think he will be more involved going forward, because I don't think that the Patriots necessarily needed to use him this game. You know, the Patriots, their defense is not very good. I know they looked decent against the Colts, but that's a team that's missing both their starting offensive tackles. They were missing, you know, their top tight end. They were missing their top wide receiver. That team on defense was missing so many players. Like, they were missing, Clayton Gathers got hurt. He left that game. They were missing 2 starting cornerbacks in that. They were missing their top linebacker. Like, there were so many things with the Colts that were wrong, and so many injuries that they had. They actually had Darius Leonard, their stud rookie linebacker. They had him active for the game, but they didn't have him dress, because basically they didn't have enough healthy bodies to dress everybody.
Yeah.
Nuts.
I know. They were, I don't know how many people they actually had who could play. It was like 44 or something like that.
Yeah, I think that's what it was.
And they started just every single series, somebody came off and was declared out for the game. It was really remarkable. So the fact that they kept that close at all. The one thing I'll say about Gordon again, I wouldn't say that I was encouraged. Obviously, he didn't have a huge snap count. But I mean, Chris Hogan obviously has the terrible sort of play where he kind of forces Brady into an interception where he just sort of lets it go. And I know you had said last week that you were actually thinking that it could be good for Hogan that Edelman was coming back. And also, you know, Philip Dorsett is fine. In the end, I just think that Gordon has, so long as he can kind of stay focused and stay on the field, I think his role is going to continue to grow. And, you know, it's somewhat encouraging just to see, again, what you're saying is that Brady just kind of was like, all right, I'm going to take my chance here and throw it up into double coverage, and he came down with it. But I think really it's just kind of the lackluster play of the other sort of wide receivers not named Edelman that kind of encourages me a little bit about Gordon. On the other side of the ball, an enormous game from Eric Ebron, 15 targets, you know, 9 catches, 105 yards, 2 touchdowns. You had him 13th rest of season coming into the game. Are you moving him up at this point, or are you still thinking when Jack Doyle, whenever he comes back, that's going to kind of minimize Ebron?
Yeah, it's really tough for me to say where I'd view him because I always thought Jack Doyle was going to come back sooner. Ebron is going to stay right around that range for me. It's like in the range with guys like O.J. Howard and Evan Engram, where it's like, you know, I don't know when those guys are returning, so it's like there's some risk in those guys. But unless I hear that Jack Doyle's going to miss another few weeks, it's hard to move Ebron up because Ebron is a tight end one. I think I ranked him as my number 6 tight end this week because it's like the tight end position, it's like if you're going to get targets and if Doyle is out, it's like you're morphing those targets into one, and you saw the results of that in a good matchup against New England. So I do like him when he's the only tight end, but when Doyle comes back, I still think Doyle's the guy. Like it was told in the snap counts. Like Ebron's going to score some touchdowns here and there, and Andrew Luck looks really good. They have no run game. So it's like when we talk about Kirk Cousins, when we talk about Andrew Luck, you have to kind of look at their pass catchers and upgrade them a little bit because they don't have a run game. They don't have an offensive line that's blocking for the run game. Their defense is not very good. So it's like you have to anticipate them throwing the ball, you know, 45 plus times a game. And that's why the two of them are atop the league leaders in pass attempts. So Ebron is definitely someone that's an every week start while Jack Doyle is out. Once Doyle comes back, he moves back into the streaming radar, but he's still a good player to have on your team.
Yeah, I think that that's fair. I think he's a borderline starter. Again, Luck had nobody to throw the ball to in this game. T.Y. Hilton was out as well, which obviously contributed to Ebron's target share. So I agree. It's nice to see the huge game. We all expected it. Everybody ranked him well this week, given just the injuries on the offensive side of the ball. But I'm certainly not putting him into a must-start territory, particularly if Hilton and or Doyle are healthy. Moving on to today's games, Bengals 27, Dolphins 17. Let's start with the Dolphins side of the ball because Kenyon Drake is alive. He has just 6 rushes for 46 yards. And Frank Gore got 12 carries for 63 yards, so maybe you can explain that to me. But through the air, obviously, Drake does his damage. 11 targets, 7 catches, 69 yards, and a touchdown. You and I both had him around the same place rest of season heading into this week. You had him 33rd. I had him 35th. Is this game enough for you to move him up and say, you know what, maybe he can actually be more like a borderline RB2?
Not really. I mean, like, I like Drake the talent, and we've talked about it on the show before. Where, like, we believe that eventually talent would win, but we're now in week 5. And Frank Gore is still out carrying him. I think Adam Gase like is blowing this. Like the thing is I'm not saying that Kenyon Drake has looked fantastic because I don't think he has actually from what I've seen. But Frank Gore is not the answer either. Like that's the thing is like we're talking about a guy that's what 34 years old, 35 years old now, and like he's a downhill runner and he's gotten better. Like he's done better behind this offensive line than I thought he would. And this offensive line might be without Laremy Tunsil next week because he suffered a concussion in this game, but it's hard for me to put Drake above guys like Royce Freeman because we at least know he's going to get goal line carries at times. He's in a timeshare, sure, but he has a valuable role as the goal line back. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, would you take someone like Kenyon Drake or Aaron Jones?
I think coming into this week, I probably would have said Jones, but we'll get to that game in a few minutes, but Jones had, what, 7 carries today? And Williams had 6, and they basically had the exact same line. I haven't looked at the snap counts, and maybe you know what they are, but, you know, unless Jones sort of shows, here's the thing. Again, I think I said almost this exact same thing last week. There is no reason for this, and I just kind of refuse to accept that this is the way life is going to be. Now, he had a big game, Kenyon Drake, in this game, but, you know, in the end, there is no way that Frank Gore should get double the carries that Kenyon Drake is getting. There's just no way. I mean, I just have to assume that eventually, and maybe with this one, their second straight loss, that's going to kind of wake them up a little bit and that eventually Drake would get it. I think Drake for Jones is probably roughly a fair trade. I don't know. I'd probably just stay on whichever side I was on. But, you know, I don't get this, and it makes me just want to go up to Adam Gase and shake him.
I'd take Jones just because like I feel like both of them are in a similar scenario where they're both the more talented running back and they're trying to earn a bigger part of the timeshare, but Jones obviously plays for a much better offense. And that's the thing is like Ryan Tannehill's looked bad the last couple weeks. Adam Gase doesn't know how to coach. looking at their matchup next week against the Bears, the Bears through four games have allowed 48.4 PPR points to running backs. Like not just like each starter, like I'm talking about every single running back they've played, and it's the lowest in the NFL by a long shot. Like no team is within 10 points of them. So they're stopping the run game. So I'll be curious to see how Kenyon Drake's usage is next week, because he's obviously the primary pass catcher out of the backfield. They've had Kalen Ballage getting a few carries recently. So I still think Kenyon Drake is like in that low end RB3 category, but I don't trust him. I can't.
You know, I don't know, Tags. I feel like sometimes, you know, we do rankings and, you know, we both do trade charts and stuff like that. And I think sometimes you don't really know exactly how you feel about a player until you're actually faced with the choice of what to do in one of your own leagues, right? And I was sort of faced with that with Drake, where I kind of feel like, I feel like he's a buy low. I feel like this is going to happen, but I could never pull the trigger on it. Even when the price is, you know, small at this point, I really can't. So I think that probably speaks volumes to how I actually feel his usage is going to be going forward. But goodness gracious, for just give him more work. And again, I said this last week, Gase, I believe drafted him and he showed it last year when he was forced to get all the work because Damian Williams was out. So he knows he can do it. So I just don't get this. You know what? I'm done. I'm done with my Kenyon Drake rant. And frankly, I'll pick it up exactly right here next week after Frank Gore gets 20 carries and Drake gets 3 carries against the Bears. So we can move on that. On the Bengals side of the ball, you know, Joe Mixon comes back and gets everything. Nobody else gets a carry. 22 for 93, plus 3 catches for 22 yards and touchdown. So a nice bounce back for him. Maybe any thoughts on Tyler Boyd? He kind of a disappointing game. Most of us were pretty excited about him. It was a good spot. 7 targets, but only 4 catches for 44 yards.
I had talked about him being like in a warning spot because Bobby was saying that Tyler Boyd was like a must play because like looking at what had happened out of the slot the last couple weeks against Miami. And I warned him that Rashad Jones had been out for them. Their Pro Bowl starting safety, and it forced Minkah Fitzpatrick, who they'd been using as their nickel cornerback, it forced him to go play at safety, and that's obviously not good because it forced that, like, they didn't have a nickel cornerback anymore, and he had to play safety, so teams were exposing that, and Rashad Jones came back, so Minkah Fitzpatrick was matched up with him, and it's a tough matchup. Like, Minkah, in terms of slot cornerbacks this year, he had allowed, like, a 25 quarterback rating in his coverage, and there's no other nickel cornerback that was, like, less than a 50 quarterback rating. So like, he was by far the best slot corner so far this year. Coming out of Alabama, you know, he's like pro ready. Everybody kind of knew that about Fitzpatrick. They didn't know about his ceiling, but he's playing fantastic. And so it's not shocking for me to see Tyler Boyd have a mediocre game.
Okay. Anything else? Bengals side of the ball?
No, not really. I mean, Joe Mixon, stud. Like, you know, getting that many touches, you can't avoid him. Like, and Giovanni Bernard is out. They said 2 to 4 weeks. Mark Walton is just like a part-time player. So yeah, Joe Mixon, keep going.
I was a little worried, frankly, because I believe is it Thomas Rawls? Is he their third down back or their third guy or something that they
signed him.
They made him active. He was active today, I believe. And that made me a little worried that maybe
might have been like for emergency in case something happened.
I guess it was. But yeah. They only, with Gio active, they only had 2 running backs active at that point. So it made me a little worried coming in. It didn't affect anything. Obviously for me, I still started him wherever I had him, but it made me a little worried that maybe he wasn't fully ready to go, or just in case they were a little concerned, but obviously he got all the work, looked fantastic. So he's a full go going forward. Panthers 33, Giants 31 in an incredible game. Panthers win on the last minute, 63-yard field goal. Tons of goodness from this game, but frankly, I'm not really sure if there was any Giant takeaway from a fantasy perspective. Odell obviously finds the end zone finally and throws a touchdown pass, of course. Kind of all our guys, you know, McCaffrey was a little disappointing for most of the game until coming on in the end. Is there anything you want to say on either side of the ball that really kind of caught your interest here?
DJ Moore was on the field more than he's been, and we saw that prior to their bye week. He had played a few more snaps, and this week he actually played the exact same amount of snaps as Jarius Wright, so he's earning his way into the lineup, and he's looked really good when he gets on the field. So I don't know. DJ Moore is someone I would keep my eye on, knowing that Devin Funchess is not a special talent or anything like that. He does see targets, but DJ Moore is a better athlete than Devin Funchess, and he catches the underneath targets and he'll make something happen after the catch. He was doing that today. Curtis Samuel was more involved. So I think Devin Funchess, I think his ceiling is coming down. I think that DJ Moore is on the rise and Curtis Samuel is going to have his plays here and there. But all of this combined is just meaning maybe a little bit fewer targets for Christian McCaffrey than we initially expected this year. And Greg Olson's coming back next week. So I don't know if there's any big takeaways, though, because like Eli Manning, he came back in that game. He hasn't looked great, though. Odell Beckham finally had his breakout game. But there's nothing in this game that just makes me feel like, I need to raise this guy in my rankings or I need to lower him very much. I think the biggest one for me is Funchess, just knowing that DJ Moore is getting more involved.
Was, out of curiosity, I don't know if you were able to watch it, did Jenkins shadow Funchess at all in this game?
Jenkins was on him the majority of the time, from what I saw. I wasn't watching that game like solely, but I tried to keep my eyes on that one. But yeah, from what I saw, he was covering him. So it was always going to be a tough matchup for him.
Yeah, and Funchess wasn't, awful in the game. He got 7 targets, 4 catches for 53 yards. And if Jenkins is on you, frankly, given what he's done to, Michael Thomas, that's really not a terrible effort. But basically what you're saying is just confirming everything I kind of felt. Yeah, a lot of the studs had great games, and that's what they're going to do. I mean, to the extent anybody was worried about Odell Beckham Jr., they should not have been. But obviously this shows that he's still going to have the big game. And again, in the end, this is kind of, I think, exactly what you said. This is just kind of what we expected, and I highly doubt that any person rest of season is going to really move significantly one way or the other based on their performance in this game. So other than being completely entertaining and tons of points, there's really very little fantasy takeaway from there. So there you go. Expert analysis. Bills 13, Titans 12. The Titans, of course, finding a way to win every single game, somehow lose to the Bills in really just a disgusting game, because I've probably made Bills fans so mad by essentially skipping over them every single podcast. I will say LeSean McCoy finally contributes, 24 carries, I believe, for 85 yards plus 2 catches for 23 through the air, which is nice to see. But really what I want to ask you about is, I need you to explain Derrick Henry to me, please. This was the game, right? This was the one. Now, the Titans didn't jump out to the lead like everyone sort of expected, where they would just feed Henry the ball, but he got 11 carries for 56 yards. Looked great. Game was tight all the way through. Mariota only threw for 129 yards. What is happening, and why do they refuse to give Derrick Henry the ball more?
I think it was a wasted opportunity by the Titans coaching staff. I really do. I feel like this was your chance to run the ball and like make something happen, like give some confidence to these guys, and they didn't do it. Deion Lewis didn't look very good, but he was out there almost twice as much as Derrick Henry was. Like, every time I looked at that game, Derrick Henry was not in the game. He ran pretty well. He just looks so slow, because I think it's because he's so big. Like, it just, like, you don't expect someone to be big to move fast. But the thing is he's like, he is dancing a little too much in the backfield, but it's just, I don't know. He didn't look terrible today, but again, the matchup, this is a matchup that the Titans coaching staff should have taken advantage of and said, Marcus Mariota, we know who you are, and even though you had a great game last week, we're not going to put complete trust in you. We're going to run the ball because we need to instill confidence in our running backs. Taylor Lewan got hurt in this game. They're starting left tackle, so he had to leave. I don't know if he ever returned to that game, but if he's down again, that hurts the entire offense. But this is starting to turn into a running back that I don't even know what to do with him anymore. Like, between him and Kenyon Drake, those are running backs that I don't know what to do with. Like, I don't want to own them, but I also don't.
Yeah, I want to ask you that right away. I mean, you had him 34th coming into this game. I had him 45th tag, so I'm further along than you are. Is he droppable? If you are in a roster crunch, you have bye weeks coming up, can you flat out drop Derrick Henry?
I don't think I would in a 12-team standard league, just because it's like, running backs are hard to come by, because like, once you get outside the top like 32 running backs, I feel like it's all a toss-up. Like, Matt Breida just got hurt again today. Tariq Cohen has had one decent game. Jamal Williams is falling out of favor for Aaron Jones. Chris Carson's in a timeshare with Mike Davis, apparently. Ronald Jones, we still haven't seen play. Like, Isaiah Crowell is a player that you'd probably take over Derrick Henry right now, because at least Isaiah Crowell is delivering big performances from time to time. Like, he'll bust from time to time as well, but at least he's giving you some long runs. Derrick Henry hasn't done anything, so I'm just worried that the offensive scheme doesn't work for him. So I don't think I'd drop him, but it doesn't feel great to own him either.
So I think this is what I'll say. I own Henry in a couple of spots. I'm not looking to drop him. I'm not looking at him on my roster as somebody who is completely just sort of fungible, and I can be like, whatever, sure, I don't care, I'm going to drop him. I'm going to hesitate before I do it. But I'm going to do it. If I need a roster spot, I'm not really going to, because, I mean, they're hosting the Ravens next week. You're certainly not going to start him there. I'm struggling to find a place where I'm going to say, you know what, this is when I'm going to start this guy, absent, a huge bye week situation. So I'm not saying go out there and drop Derrick Henry, because again, you're right, he's a running back who gets carries and you just don't want to drop those guys. But I'm certainly further along than you are. If it comes to it, I'm going to hesitate, but I'm going to do it. And I'm not really going to feel all that bad about it. Because you know what, frankly, I think at this point, if somebody picks up Derrick Henry and he burns me in a matchup in week 10, I'm going to live with that. I don't think I'm going to be like, oh my God, how could I have dropped Derrick Henry? I've made the worst move. So look, it is what it is at this point. And although I probably won't drop him in the league where I own him, I have no problem if people do. So I'm probably coming in a little stronger than you. I mean, I was lower than you coming in. I'm probably going to be lower than you going out. So that's basically where I am. I was really disappointed. And he ran okay. I mean, he gained 56 yards in his 11 carries. But if they're not going to give him the ball in this game, I don't know what we're going to do. So that's basically how I feel. Browns 12, Ravens 9 in overtime. The Browns just love overtime. We talked already about Carlos Hyde and Nick Chubb. On the Ravens side of the ball, Joe Flacco just throws 56 times and throws terribly overall. Let's start at least with the Ravens side of the ball. I mean, I don't understand. This is not a game where they were in catch-up mode. This was obviously tight all the way through. They were running the ball effectively. Alex Collins gained 59 yards on 12 carries. Buck Allen gained 34 yards on 8 carries. What is the deal with throwing 56 times? Why weren't they focusing on the run game more?
It's a great question. It's a great question. I actually liked Alex Collins quite a bit this week. I had him ranked as a top 15 running back because I felt like it was a matchup they could do that. The game script should have probably been pretty good. Like, there was no way this game got out of control for Baltimore considering their defense. And it didn't. It never got out of control. You know what I mean? Like, Baltimore started the game up 3-0. They went into half down 6-3, and it was close throughout. There was no point in the game where it was like, uh-oh, we better start throwing, but this is just bad play calling. Terrible. The Browns have been exposed in the ground this year, like missing Danny Shelton up the middle. It's affected their defense, and nobody wants to talk about it, but this was just terrible play calling on the Ravens' part. John Brown, 14 targets. Michael Crabtree, 12 targets, and neither of them really did anything. Flacco was overthrowing receivers. The play calling was just... it was weak. It was really weak. They didn't get Hayden Hurst involved at all. He only saw 2 targets. That tight end room is just like a mess right now, and you don't want to predict it until we see someone emerge. But yeah, it was just a bad game all around by Baltimore. They deserved to lose it. They really did.
No, I completely agree. It was really just, you know, when I saw the box score, I was shocked, especially, you know, that Brown had 14 targets, you know, and only 4 catches. I mean, that's sort of what this game sort of epitomizes, what this game was. It made no sense. And again, it's the same thing with Henry where we talked about. It's one thing if you're like, you know what, we're not running effectively. So even though we're not behind, we're just going to throw all the time. But when you are running effectively, I don't understand how you could possibly get away from it. So it is frustrating. You know, I'm not sure I'm really going to take too much from it, other than, frankly, I think Buck Allen is going to continue to sort of cut into Collins' workload. I kind of really want Collins to run with it. I think the fumble problems, honestly, have just kind of prevented him from exploding like I kind of hoped that he necessarily would. On the Brown side of the ball, we obviously talked about the running backs. Is there anything you want to talk about in the passing game or nothing really to make note of?
Your buying window is closing on David Njoku. He saw 11 targets today, 6 catches, 69 yards. He's like an every down player. Like, David Njoku... he's a tight end one, like an every week play, and you have to do it. They haven't had a great schedule for him to this point, so like he's someone that I would make it a point. If you're looking at like if you're looking for a solution at tight end and you thought Vance McDonald might be it, well, you might be wrong. But yeah, he is like someone I think I have ranked as a top 8 tight end for the rest of the year. And Baker Mayfield is someone, if you're playing in a 2 quarterback league, if the person that owns him thinks that this is what he is, trade for him right now because he's only going to get better. He didn't have reps with the first team offense throughout the entire camp. He didn't have reps with the first team offense until Tyrod Taylor went down. So he's slowly getting to know his receivers. Against Baltimore, they had not allowed a quarterback more than 274 passing yards since week 14 of last year, and it was Ben Roethlisberger. Mayfield threw 342 today. A touchdown and a pick, but I mean, Baker's going to get better. It really stinks that he doesn't have Josh Gordon because this offense would have been so good. But yeah, Baker's going to get better. So if you're looking for a quarterback that could be, you know, a high-end streamer or potentially, I don't want to say an every week starter because it's very rare to have those guys, but Baker in a 2 quarterback format, he's an awesome one to have.
Yeah, I do want to echo what you said about Njoku. I mean, he is sort of, and I think he has worked his way beyond just that streamable sort of, you know, gaggle of guys that we have down there, that I do think that he's much closer to just basically being an every week starter. So if there was one guy I was going to talk about on the passing game, he was it. So I'm glad you brought him up. Jets 34, Broncos 16. And here's my one problem. Tags. I really wish there would have been someone out there, just someone who would have said, you know, guys, look, I know he's been terrible. I really know. But what I would do is I would pick up Robbie Anderson now before this game starts because this is a great spot for him. And I think they're going to take more shots. And if they do, then you're just not going to be able to get him. And obviously, Tags, that man was you who was telling us on last week's Sunday Night Podcast and during the week this week on the podcast, you really nailed this one. Robbie Anderson, only 5 targets, but that's basically what he's going to do. He goes huge, 3 catches, 123 yards, 2 touchdowns. First, I mean, look, do you want to just crow? I'll just sit back if you want. and just talk about how awesome you are, because that was an amazing call.
I'm going to have to eat crow the other side of things, though, and Isaiah Crowell, because, like, you know, I'm so tired of this. Like, every single time he has a good game, dude, my mentions just blow up. And it's not really fair, because I'm not blowing up your mentions when Isaiah Crowell has, like, 0.4 points in a game.
Maybe you should, by the way. Maybe that's what you need to start doing. Just
I'm not going to do that, because I'm not, like, a I-told-you-so type of guy. Like, obviously, my job is to do the best analysis that I can. The Jets' offensive line is still not very good. Sam Darnold only got sacked once today. Crowell obviously had some room against Denver. Denver's been starting to struggle against the run recently, and I don't know if it's, like, something I need to pay more attention to, but, like, last week, Kareem Hunt ran all over them, but there's no way that anybody would have seen 318 yards on 35 carries for Bilal Powell and Isaiah Crowell. So, I mean, the Robbie Anderson thing, I talked about it on the live stream again this morning, telling people that they shouldn't have given up on Robbie Anderson. I talked about him on the DFS show because I felt like he was a good play. But going forward, like, he's going to play the Colts this next week, so he has another great matchup. And then the schedule worsens a little bit. He's not going to be an every week guy, but he was definitely worth adding. It was good to see Darnold go outside of his comfort zone here. Like, Darnold only threw the ball 22 times, but, you know, five targets to Anderson is big for him. He's made it work. And, like, the deep balls that he's thrown to Robbie Anderson, that's where he's getting production. So I'm happy to see it. The Colts defense is a defense that'll allow that to happen, especially if they have Clayton Gathers out again. Like, it's just the deep part of the field can be exposed. Robbie Anderson had a really tough start to his schedule. He played against, it was Darius Slade week one. Week two, he had to go up against Xavien Howard. Week three, he went up against Denzel Ward. And then week four, he went up against Jalen Ramsey. So the thing is like I said, he may have went against like four top 10 cornerbacks to start his year, and people were giving up on him. So, I mean, the thing is like, I was like, I'm not saying that you have to start him, but I said he was worth an add to see if this matchup was the first one that he actually could have done some damage. And I'm just happy to see that he did.
Well, frankly, I think it was much more about the play calling and just sort of, you know, taking the gloves off of Darnold, you know, because in the end, they don't really take that many shots. They just haven't throughout this whole thing, and their play calling had become so predictable, and they just were not really willing to go after it, and they went after it right now. And Darnold made, you know, the two touchdown catches were both great throws by Darnold, so it was really good to see. But kudos to you, frankly, to X for me trying to basically explain how awesome of a call that was, and for you instead sort of just jumping on Crowell and talking about how you essentially might have gotten that wrong. I don't understand. Look, Crowell looked great today. I mean, it was one of the few games that I was really able to watch and dig into. He looked great. But this was a spot for the Jets. And when I saw that, you know, what really opened my eyes was the spread on the game. When it first sort of came up, I was like, wait, the Jets are favored in this game? That made no sense. It was a short week. They were coming off a devastating loss for the Broncos. It was just a game that sort of set up perfectly. He ran well. I'm still not trusting him going forward. Obviously, against the Colts, he's going to be in play, certainly. But in the end, you know, it's certainly not something that I would feel bad of. I don't know of many fantasy analysts who are out there really ranking Crowell well at this point, but obviously the Jets running game could do whatever they wanted today, both him and Powell. So, you know, that's fair that you talked about it, but really, I certainly wouldn't feel too bad about it. On the Broncos side of the ball, look, I mean, everyone was excited. And you mentioned Royce Freeman. I mean, after his performance last week, he got just five carries today for 31 yards. Lindsey sees 12 for 61 yards. I mean, Freeman does have three catches, but I mean, what's going on here with the Broncos backfield going forward?
Vance Joseph talked about, oh, we need to get him more touches. Well, I mean, words are cheap, man. It's like Hugh Jackson talking about Duke Johnson. I'm just tired of it. And you can't believe anything that comes out of these guys' mouths anymore. The thing is Philip Lindsay's playing well, so it's tough to take looks away from him. But why isn't he playing the role that Devontae Booker is in the passing game then? Like, why not play Lindsay more in passing downs? Because Devontae Booker saw six targets this game. Like, why is Devontae Booker still a thing? That's my issue. Like, he's not even on the same level as these two running backs, but he's still getting time. And that's the part that aggravates me. It's like the whole thing of, like, saying competent coaching or, you know, rational coaching. It just doesn't exist. Demaryius Thomas is someone that I would sell high after this game. You know, people talk about the Jets and, like, oh, Trumaine Johnson. Trumaine Johnson didn't play this week. Morris Claiborne has been... He's just like a very hit or miss cornerback. Like, he has moments where he looks really good, but then there's moments where he's like lost. So Demaryius Thomas putting up 105 yards and a touchdown, the touchdown, which was in garbage time. I would sell high on Demaryius Thomas right now.
Yeah, I don't really think there are many people who would be willing to buy high, but I mean, I'm not saying that to go against what you're saying. I'm just saying if they are, then you should. I agree. He got six targets. Obviously, Sanders sees 14 targets, nine catches for 72 yards. Yes, the Jets defense was obviously beat up without Trumaine Johnson, so I wouldn't read too much into this. I like Demaryius Thomas. I try to defend him, generally speaking, going forward, but in the end, he's not going to earn his draft day price. I feel pretty confident in that. But yeah, again, the Devontae Booker thing it is maddening. There is no reason for it. I really cannot understand it. But it really hurts Freeman's value, because if he's just not going to see the work, he's not going to see the work. And you hope that a loss like this is maybe something that kind of turns it around. But frankly, they were destroyed in this game. So it doesn't really make it seem like, well, if we just gave Freeman more touches, we would have been okay. But in the end, I hope he gets more touches. He can't get 5 carries in a game. That's just ridiculous. So hopefully more going forward. Steelers 41, Falcons 17. You know, I think these Ben Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown guys, they may have a future in the league, I think, going forward. They're pretty decent. James Conner has a huge day, 2 touchdowns. He has basically almost 200 total yards. Now, Tags, I wanted to ask you something, because I looked at your rest of season rankings earlier this week. You had Conner 12th. Did that factor in the news about Bell coming in, or did that come out after?
So the thing is like, I did some buy and sell stuff, and I always update my rest of season rankings on a Monday, Sunday and Monday. Like actually a lot of my rankings are already updated, and I'll look at them again tomorrow morning. So I usually do them then. So it wasn't totally bought in, but I've moved Connor down to like the 18 to 22 range now. Like, I'm trying to figure out where to put him, because obviously Le'Veon Bell's going to be coming back soon. I was still of the mindset that I thought it could have been some marketing play by the Steelers trying to get Le'Veon Bell to say that he's coming back so that they'd be able to trade him to a different team. Because if he wasn't going to return till week 10, he has minimal trade value to a team. So I still thought that there was like some chance, like some risk there to Le'Veon Bell. So I've actually moved him up to my number 10 running back for the remainder of the season, and I moved Connor down. Like I said, I have him like in the range of that 20th running back, where it's like, I know I'm going to get like another week out of James Connor.
It's one more week, because they have the bye week.
But yeah, he's definitely going to move down to probably, I would assume like the 25 to 32 range, and it's not even great there, like, to be honest with you, because it's like, it all depends. Like, if you have a team that's built to go to the playoffs, and you're sitting there at, you know, 4-1 or something like that, or 5-0 after 5 weeks, I would definitely move. But if you need wins, like if you're on a team that needs wins right now, obviously it's hard to find a running back that can produce like Connor can.
No, I think that, and I think in the end, bottom line is, I think the way I'd sum it up is, I do feel comfortable saying that I feel confident that Bell is coming back and then he's going to play for the Steelers for the rest of the season. That could be wrong. He could get dealt at sort of the last minute. And so if you're the Connor owner, I mean, he maybe for the first week he kind of splits and stuff like that, but I do think it's going to be almost entirely Bell's backfield once he gets back. And so for me, if I'm the Connor owner, if I need a win this week, that's fine. Other than that, I'd look to probably deal him to somebody who desperately needs a win this week and sort of is in a really tough spot. Other than that, there's not much you can do. I do think that this is sort of their thinking, like, well, we're not going to be relying on him all that much for the rest of the season, so let's just give him as much work as possible. It was a fantastic matchup, obviously, with the Falcons, so he did his work. But again, I agree with you. I don't know exactly where I'll drop him down to. I think he was already 24th for me coming into this week, rest of the season, so I'll move him down further. But that's basically what I would look to do. If you need a win this week, keep Connor. If not, try to deal him to somebody who just desperately needs a win, because I really think after this week, he's going to be almost useless to you going forward. For the Falcons, they obviously basically abandoned the run game because they were down so big. Only 8 carries for Freeman, 7 for Coleman. Kind of a quiet day for Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley. Do you want to say anything about the Falcons' offense?
They were terrible.
There you have it.
It was just bad. Like the distribution between the two. They fell behind early. They were down 13-0, but then they ended up coming back. And it was, I think it was 13-10 at halftime. Pittsburgh should have beat Atlanta even bigger than they did. Like, Ben Roethlisberger didn't have a great game. Like, and that's the thing. People can talk about Roethlisberger's stats all they want, but he didn't play a great game. Antonio Brown matched up with Isaiah Oliver was like the biggest mismatch. Like, his game could have even been bigger. I am just so disappointed. Like, to watch Julio Jones, he didn't have a catch until the fourth quarter. It's a disgrace. Like, that shouldn't happen, guys. Like, wide receivers like Antonio Brown, like, you should not let them go to waste. Like, why do you think Pittsburgh's passing game has had so much success? They target Antonio Brown relentlessly. Yes, they have Juju, who is, I mean, he only saw 4 targets today, but he's another threat. They got Calvin Ridley to be that guy. Mohamed Sanu has been playing well recently. So it's like, man, Julio Jones' matchup was just so good this week. It's embarrassing to see him finish, to not have a catch until the fourth quarter. It's just embarrassing.
I completely agree. And in the end, I'm willing to write it off because I'm willing to say how bad they looked in this game. That those are the types of things where Matt Ryan or somebody's going to be like, you know what we probably need to do? We need to get Julio Jones the ball more. And I think that's probably going to happen next week. And it's a great matchup against the Bucs, even though they're coming off a bye. So I do think in the end, he'll get much more involved, but it certainly was disappointing. Tags, let's pick it up a bit. Chiefs 30, Jaguars 14. Obviously Chiefs with the big win, but Pat Mahomes does not look great. He does score the rushing touchdown, but he throws 2 picks. Kareem Hunt gets in the end zone. Anything you want to say in the Chiefs side of the ball?
Not really. I mean, Mahomes, he was fine. Obviously the 2 picks don't look great on the stat sheet. He did run for the one touchdown, but I watched like a lot of that game. Obviously, it was big to me. Like it was. I wanted to watch that one because it was just like an elite offense meets an elite defense, and the Jags defense continually put them in a bad spot. Blake Bortles throwing pick six to defensive linemen, hitting his own offensive lineman in the head with passes. Like legitimately, Blake Bortles looked like he looked like 2 years ago. Blake Bortles, where it's like, what is this guy doing in the NFL? And I'm really curious to see what the Jags do at quarterback. I mean that the backup is it's Cody Kessler, if I'm not mistaken. I don't think that he's like someone that they're going to put their like the season on his shoulders or anything like that. But they need to consider like what they're doing in the draft this year because they need to figure out a solution, because Blake Bortles is just, you never know what you're going to get from week to week. We should call him Forrest Gump.
Or more like a box. We should call him a box of chocolates.
A box of chocolates. There we go. But yeah, it was just a terrible game. Dante Moncrief with 15 targets. I don't know. The thing is like it was 61 pass attempts. Like, D.D. Westbrook not performing, you know, 3 catches for 55 yards. Like, there was just so, like, it was such a letdown from this offense. Like, I thought they would at least be competent against the Kansas City Chiefs. Like, it was raining early in that game, but it let up after, I think it was, like, the first quarter.
Yeah. My opinion basically is, other than the running back, whoever it is, if it's T.J. Yeldon, obviously had a big game today. He scores the touchdown. He gets over 100 all-purpose yards. Other than whoever the running back is, if it's Fournette or Yeldon, I don't think you can rely on anybody in this offense. I don't think if you're going to look at Westbrook or Westbrook had 5 targets today. I mean, that's not going to work.
On 61 pass attempts.
Right, exactly. And after last week, everybody was like, well, this is going to be it. No, Cole saw 10, but Moncrief is the guy who sees 15 targets, as you said. So in the end, I just think, frankly, Bortles will probably have some decent fantasy games, obviously, as Bobby always reminds us. But in the end, he's certainly not someone you can rely on. So other than the running back, I'm basically avoiding the entire offense going forward. Lions 31, Packers 23. Let's talk about the Packers running backs briefly, because we mentioned it. Aaron Jones had 7 carries, Jamal Williams 6, both of them had 2 catches, almost identical yardage. You know, Ty Montgomery got, you know, plenty of work. So talk to me about how you're feeling about Jones specifically, but about the Packers backfield.
Not much change with Jones, to be honest with you. So the Packers fell behind really early in this game and were struggling to get back into it. So I think that's a part of the reason that we saw Jamal Williams play 11 more snaps than Aaron Jones. He's a better pass protector. That's just what it is. Aaron Rodgers. But that's the thing. Like I said, Aaron Rodgers didn't have a good game. People look at his stat sheet and think that he had a good game. He did have a good, like, end of third quarter, into the fourth quarter. He played really well then. I was like, is this guy going to pull back another comeback like he did against the Bears? That's always within the realm of possibilities, but he was not on the same page with his wide receivers. They were not getting open. It's like Aaron Rodgers isn't the type that's going to like wait till you're open to throw it to you. Like, and they weren't getting open, but he's a very timing based quarterback. And like, he doesn't have the trust of these receivers. They're not looking back to them when it's like a broken down play, which Rodgers does very well. Jimmy Graham dropped a touchdown at one point. Aaron Rodgers, he had so much time to throw. Like, their pass blocking has been so good. Like, he looked like he was so comfortable back there just dancing around. It was like a Brady pocket where he could have just, you know, hopped around for, you know, 10 seconds and been fine. But he didn't play very well. But I think that's a product of the wide receivers. They were sitting 2 of their wide receivers this week. They fell behind early, and it just turned into a bad game.
Yeah, no, his fantasy numbers are great. He had 442 yards and 3 touchdowns, and that is, frankly, the most encouraging thing. He can still produce despite the fact that he basically had nobody throw the ball to. You know, Davante Adams got his, certainly 12 targets, 9 catches, 140 yards, and a touchdown. But Valdes-Scantling obviously finds the end zone. But, yeah, other than, you know, Adams and Jimmy Graham, we really weren't able to take much away from them. So I'm sort of willing to write it off for Rodgers. But again, you know, I stuck with him. I didn't have him ranked. You know, I think I had him ranked in the top 10 this week, but certainly not an overwhelming guy. And I sort of briefly thought about waiver wiring it, but in the end, I'm sticking with him. And he looks healthier in the end, as far as I could tell. So that's really the bottom line. And once Geronimo Allison comes back, I think regardless of Randall Cobb, I think you're going to see closer to the Aaron Rodgers of old.
Yeah, that's a big takeaway. Aaron Rodgers did look extremely healthy. He's not limping around anymore. So they took him off the injury report. Everything looks good in that. Davante Adams, man, the dude is matchup proof. Like, against Darius Slay, he had a game.
Yep. And he, obviously, everybody knew he was going to have to be the focus for the Packers, but he still got it done. On the other side of the ball, obviously, LeGarrette Blount scores the 2 touchdowns. Kerryon Johnson did leave the game with an ankle injury. I don't know if we know how serious it was. I believe they have a bye next week.
Yeah, they do. Yes, they're on the bye, and New Orleans is on the bye.
Right. So I don't know how bad the ankle injury was, but it didn't sound early on like something that's going to keep him out past the bye week.
It was tough to say. It was tough to say, because like, I saw that play. I was watching that game as that happened, and it was on a decent run. He was getting closer to, he was like within 5 10 yards of scoring a touchdown. And it was as he was going out of bounds, his foot just, like the way his leg came down was just awkward. And I was worried it was his knee when it first happened. So I'm happy to hear it's just an ankle injury. But the way it came down, it was like a shock to his leg. So it's obviously concerning. He was getting it taped up on the sideline. So I don't know how bad it is. I don't know if we're going to see him in a walking boot. But it is good that he has a bye week because he's obviously got 2 weeks to rest it up.
Right. I'm sure we'll all be running to pick up LeGarrette Blount because Matt Patricia is completely obsessed with him anyway. But anyway, good game, obviously. He looked good before he got injured. I believe it was 12 for 70. So he definitely is somebody who we're all waiting for the talent just kind of to win out. And I'm going to ask you this real quick. You don't need any analysis, but every week I'm going to ask this. Rank the three Lions wide receivers going forward.
Galladay, Tate, Jones.
Ooh, okay, good. I think last week I definitely did, had it Tate, Galladay, Jones. Is that right?
I was slowly moving down Tate, and I think it depends on if it's a PPR or a standard league. I think that would change things, but Kenny Galladay, he's the focal point, man. I know Marvin Jones had an ankle injury, but he also dropped a touchdown. There was an offside call, so they had a free play, and Stafford bombed it. It was like a 40-plus yard touchdown that when he hit the ground, it bounced out, and it sucked because Marvin Jones was someone I had in a tournament lineup, and I was hoping he'd catch that pass. But
yeah, he did catch the one touchdown, obviously. Right?
Yeah, for sure. But Kenny Galladay made like a highlight reel catch. It was like a Calvin Johnson-esque catch where he just went up and snagged it out of the air and ran down the sideline, and I thought he was going to go for a touchdown. But he's been playing really well, man. There's really no reason that the target stopped coming to him.
Yep, he is absolutely legit. I do think he's the best wide receiver to own on that team going forward, especially in standard leagues at least, because he is legit. He's a total freak. Chargers 26, Raiders 10. I mean, this game was never really in doubt. We've talked mostly about the Raiders. Derek Carr equals not good. Amari Cooper equals not getting targets. Is there anything else you want to say on the Raiders side of the ball?
Marshawn Lynch is upset. He was yelling into his helmet walking to the sidelines. And like when Derek Carr threw an interception, they were on the 1 yard line and they ran a play action and Carr threw a pick. It was an ugly one too, like to Melvin Ingram. There's not much to take away from that. Like,
I mean, Jordy does find the end zone again. I mean, he only obviously has 4 targets. He does catch all of them, 43 yards and a touchdown. How are you feeling about Jordy Nelson? Is he in the wide receiver 3 range going forward?
I like Jordy. So Seth Roberts had been like seeing limited playing time the last few weeks. Like, he was out 2 weeks ago, and the last week he didn't play very much. And they had Jordy running his over half of his routes out of the slot. So I was like, wow, if this is the way it's going to be going forward, Jordy's like a wide receiver 4 and a wide receiver 3 in good matchups. And I felt like this could be a matchup where you could have played him. So to see him finish with 43 yards and a touchdown, the touchdown, by the way, came on a play where the Raiders just like ran up to the line and it didn't even seem like Amari Cooper was set in his spot, in the formation, and they just snapped it and Jordy Nelson was uncovered because like the Chargers just weren't ready for the play to happen. It should have been a penalty. It really should have been, but it wasn't. And Jordy Nelson got rewarded because of it. But ultimately this comes down to Derek Carr just not being very good.
Yeah, it's really annoying. I like Jordy. I was kind of writing him off before the season started. I've been reluctantly kind of moving him up my rankings. But look, you know, if Derek Carr is going to play this way, where for whatever reason, if it's that he's scared of the matchup or whatever reason, he just says, you know what, I'm not targeting Amari Cooper, then those targets have to go somewhere. Sometimes it's going to go to Jared Cook. A lot of times it's going to go to Jordy Nelson, especially in the red zone. So he certainly is someone who, to the extent you were like me and sort of grudgingly kind of holding him back in your rankings because you didn't want to move him up, I think it's time to let that go, man. That's what I'm doing. And on the Charger side of the ball, any big takeaways? Obviously, Keenan Allen finally kind of gets involved a little bit more than he had been. But anything you really want to talk about here?
No, I think Keenan Allen is still a good buy low target. I think that he's going to have an explosion here soon. Like, Phillip Rivers is playing too good for him not to. Mike Williams has been underwhelming the last few weeks. It's like there hasn't been much volume. So to see Mike Williams struggle a little bit, it's like, I can't believe how much is being spread out through this offense, because when you look at Phillip Rivers and his stats through 5 weeks, you got to be like, wow, who's the stud? And it's Melvin Gordon and Austin Eckler. Like, those two are getting it done on the ground. They're getting it done through the air, and no wide receiver is just like standing out, like is like a DFS must play or something like that. But I do think Keenan Allen is going to be that guy relatively soon. So if you're able to buy low, like lowish on Keenan Allen, I would do that.
100%. I have very few concerns about Keenan Allen, but I agree. Frankly, I'm not willing to trust any other Chargers pass catcher at all. The offense will run through Allen, but it runs through Melvin Gordon. But Austin Eckler is a thing, man. And I, you know, oddly enough, and I, it's funny because I don't know if you ever do this. I didn't have it ranked this way, but in the end, in one of my leagues, I was kind of faced with a choice. I can't remember exactly. I might have been Kenny Stills or Keelan Cole or Austin Eckler. And in the end, at the last minute, I subbed in Austin Eckler, even though I didn't have it in a thing. And it's just sort of one of those things where I apologize since I didn't have it ranked that way, but it's one of those things that frankly sometimes just comes up. And in the end, Eckler does it every week, but one way or another, he finds a way to do it. And his touchdown catch was awesome. I mean, he made a lot of really good moves. So I think he's going to continue to be involved. So it's an encouraging offense, but really just for those three guys. Other than that, I'm kind of moving on. Great game between the Vikings and the Eagles. Vikings 23, Eagles 21. Obviously, the unfortunate sort of development that Dalvin Cook did not play, which just makes me so angry because of the fact that they played him last week. You and I kind of touched on this. It felt like they must have been encouraged, because why would you even put him in last week unless they were obviously fully sure? So I don't know what we're going to get going forward. Obviously, Latavius Murray, in a very tough matchup, does very little. But obviously, Thielen and Diggs have big games. Kirk Cousins doesn't have the huge fantasy numbers, but plays really, really well. Is there anything you want to talk about on the Viking side of the ball?
Yeah, they played better than I thought they would in Philly. Philly has been really good at home. And I mean, to see Cousins finish, you know, with 301 yards and a touchdown, it's a better game than I thought he'd have, to be honest with you. You know, the touchdowns, I figured, like, with the lack of running game that they have and how their defense has been, it's like Kirk Cousins is going to throw the ball more often than not, just because it's like, why are we going to try and run the ball? Because we're not doing anything. Like, we're not setting up the run. Teams know exactly what we're going to do, and they can't stop Thielen and Diggs. So it's like, I don't know. I like both those players. Like, Thielen is just continues to dominate, man. The first, I saw a stat, the first player in the Super Bowl era to have five straight 100-yard games to start the season.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a great stat. Yeah, he's phenomenal. And frankly, the numbers don't do him justice. When you see him play, he is just, he's everywhere. He catches everything. He's really awesome. I know he came into the league, obviously on pace to shatter the single season record in targets. And, you know, he certainly doesn't leave the game any less. So they are great. And on the other side of the ball, the Eagles, it's basically Zach Ertz has a huge game. You know, he's got 11 targets, 10 receptions, 110 yards, and a touchdown, and nobody else. I mean, it's a disappointing day, obviously, for Alshon Jeffrey. It's a disappointing day for Nelson Agholor. What do you want to tell people about the Eagles?
Yeah, don't worry about Alshon Jeffrey Day. Matched up with Xavier Rhodes, it was never going to be a good day for him. Like,
you know, the one thing I'm going to say about that is, I mean, I can't remember all his schedule. I know they placed the Giants, obviously, on Thursday Night Football, where he's going to draw Jenkins. He's got kind of a murderer's row a little bit. I remember it's like Dez last year, where he started the season with just this murderer's row of matchup cornerbacks. I think Jeffrey has that going forward. So, I mean, are you concerned about that in any way?
He's someone that I'm a little less concerned about than most receivers, and the reason is because Carson Wentz, like, looking at NFL's next gen stats last year, Carson Wentz threw in a tight coverage, I think it was 27% of the time. There was no other quarterback even close to him. Like, Alex Smith, like, by comparison, Alex Smith was targeted, like, it was the lowest. It's basically what they consider tight coverage is within a defender within 1 yard of a receiver. Wentz did it, like, over a quarter of the time, and it works out more often than not. And Jeffrey's a player that if you give him those shots, he's going to win them, especially if you get inside the red zone. Like, Alshon's a good, he can high point the ball as good as anybody in the league. Massive hands, and Wentz just throws rockets. So if he gets like an ounce of separation, or even if he's in man coverage and he's one-on-one with some of these cornerbacks, I don't think Carson Wentz is scared to throw it to him. So it's not like a Matt Ryan situation where he's afraid to throw to Julio, or, you know, a Derek Carr situation where he's afraid to throw to Amari if they're in tight coverage.
Okay. Very good. That's good to know then, I think, for fantasy owners. Now, I think Jay Ajayi may have left this game towards the end with an injury.
He came back, though. Yeah, he was bad.
All right. Yeah, no, he was not good. The run game was not at all good today. So obviously Smallwood, I believe, got a passing touchdown. That's obviously good to see. I don't know when Corey Clement is coming back, but Smallwood sort of continues to carve out a bit of a role here. Another great game, Rams 33. Seahawks 31. The Rams lose two wide receivers to concussion, both Brandon Cooks and Cooper Kupp, I believe. Obviously it's concussions. We don't know. The hit on Cooks was enormous. So I don't know, really, but is there anything you want to talk about on the Rams? Obviously, Todd Gurley is very good. He finds the end zone three times, but is there anything else you want to talk about?
Todd Gurley is good. Great analysis. no, but I mean, you want to say that Robert Woods is going to see an increased role, and it's tough to say that he won't, but at the same time, I don't think this offense moves as well if they don't have Kupp and Cooks on the team. Like, their wide receiver depth chart's not very good. Like, Josh Reynolds is out there. They're going to have to use their tight ends a little bit more, so maybe we start looking at Tyler Higbee or Gerald Everett to see if they get some targets, so I don't know, man. It's ugly behind those guys. So I'm hoping they return. Obviously, the last thing you want to see is, like, these wide receivers, man, they've been so good. It's so fun watching them play. Like, and that's the thing is, like, I don't want to see Kupp miss time. I don't want to see Brandon Cooks miss time. But and with a concussion, you never know with these things. So
no, I agree. And frankly, I want to piggyback on what you said. I actually think it's terrible news for Woods if both of these guys need to miss next week's game against the Broncos. I mean, that's not what Woods is. He's not this number one wide receiver that, oh, great, he's going to be the focal point of the offense. He's going to get all the targets. You need these three guys, frankly, at least two of them, to be spreading out sort of the targets and take the defense's focus away from a guy. And Robert Woods is not obviously the prototypical number one wide receiver who can just sort of, you know, he can't do what Davante Adams did today, for example. So I certainly hope that both guys are able to play, or at least one of them for the offense. But again, the Rams, kudos to the Rams, man. They're just an amazing football team. On the other side of the ball, the Seahawks, a lot of interesting things. I mean, David Moore, obviously, who we all expected, catches two touchdown passes. But Russell Wilson, still not running. No rushing yards, but he does throw the three touchdowns. Tyler Lockett continues to do work, even with Doug Baldwin back. Mike Davis finds the end zone, even though Chris Carson gets 19 carries for 116 yards. I mean, talk. What do you want to talk about here?
I am done with this offense. Like, so done. Rashad Penny didn't register a single touch in this game. Was he even active? I think he was active.
I believe he was active, yes.
Yeah, he didn't register a single touch. This game, man, it was just so weird watching this kind of everything take place. But Chris Carson and Mike Davis, like, this is the backfield now. Like, Mike Davis is actually a thing. Yeah. I don't want to live in a world where Mike Davis is a thing, because it's just, I don't want to do it.
All right. Tags is out. This is it.
Doug Baldwin with one target.
What was that? What is happening right now? I mean, he was full go last week. They did not ease him back into action. He was ready to go. And so for the one target, for one catch for 1 yard, I don't get it.
It's embarrassing. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, wide receivers like these guys should not. I mean, I'm going to go back and watch this game, so I shouldn't say too much, because, like, this is one that I was kind of, like, had on the, it was on, but it was kind of in the background, and I was watching some other games because I had some DFS investments in others. But I don't know, man. I can't imagine a scenario where I'd be like, yeah, we're going to give Doug Baldwin one target.
No, it's just bizarre. Now, again, I mean, look, they put up 31 points mm-hmm. against a very good team. So, you know, kudos to them. And Wilson does get the three touchdowns. The rest of his numbers don't look particularly good. But in the end, you know, there's been a lot of talk about people. I see tags. You've kind of kept him up high in your rest of season rankings. I've dropped him more than you have. But I'm not ever willing to move on from Russell Wilson. I mean, he's done this to us before. He has these slow starts and he'll eventually figure it out. I wish he were running more, because that's kind of what his main value is coming in. But in the end, I think he's going to be fine however he does, and obviously has the big fantasy game today. So hopefully he can keep it going next week against the Raiders. Obviously, they don't have a very good defense. Final game, Cardinals 28, San Francisco 49ers 18. Obviously, look, the offense looks a lot better with Josh Rosen there. David Johnson scores the two touchdowns. He does average only 3 yards per carry. He does get only three targets and two catches. But, I mean, I'm sure you're encouraged, especially where you were 2 weeks ago with David Johnson, right?
Oh, absolutely. And that's the thing. Like, with Josh Rosen taking over, I felt like it was going to be a better offense, obviously. And I think that they've answered those questions. Even though the defense, people overlooked it. I had some DFS lineups with the Arizona Cardinals today. I felt like that defense has, like, once they got a grasp on the run game and, like, started stopping the run, they were going to be really good, because their secondaries played pretty well. But that's where it's like, it was somewhere they could have attacked the 49ers. Like, I was hoping that David Johnson would get it done, and if not, like, at least get it done through the receiving game. I felt like it was a game script that it could have worked. I picked the Cardinals to win this game. So, like, whenever you have David Johnson, you know, and he's in a game where I believe the game script is going to remain neutral, and that he should be able to rack up, you know, 20 plus touches, I'm still, like, scratching my head at how little they're using him in the passing game. Like, three targets is not enough for David Johnson. Like, they need to use him. Like, the thing is like, the Bengals have actually installed some things where Joe Mixon's lining up as a wide receiver more often, but David Johnson's not. And that's the thing, is David Johnson he's like built like a wide receiver, and like he's impossible to bring down after the catch. Joe Mixon is elusive and all, but David Johnson's, he's an animal, and he deserves more carries, but their defense is what won him this game.
Yeah, no, absolutely. With Johnson, you are encouraged, and you should be encouraged. But the idea that David Johnson is going to be the 2016 version of himself, it's just not going to happen, because he's not getting those opportunities. He's not, you know, lining up enough outside of the backfield like he needs to be able to do that. So in the end, it's certainly encouraging, and the entire Arizona offense generally is encouraging. Maybe not Larry Fitzgerald, who I'm sure is still just battling injury. And my guess is if he can ever get healthy, he'll get a bigger part of it. But in the end, David Johnson, certainly somebody who is, you know, and I'm sure most fantasy owners felt this way anyway, obviously a guaranteed every week start. But I don't think that we're going to really be seeing somebody who's going to justify being the fourth pick in most fantasy drafts. On the other side of the ball, you mentioned Matt Breida. I don't know how serious the injury was, but he was obviously ruled out relatively quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an ankle injury. They're saying that it's likely he's going to miss some time, but it's not like the worst of news.
Okay. All right. That's fine. And they do at least have an extra day. They play at the Packers on Monday Night Football. But if not, obviously Alfred Morris, he got the bulk of the work. He does very little with it, as he has done For the most part. But is there anything you want to say about the San Francisco side of the ball?
Pierre Garçon with 12 targets. That's obviously encouraging for his for him. But even, I know he didn't walk away with much, but 5 catches for 47 yards. So it's apparent that, you know, C.J. Beathard is more of like a check down guy, and that's where Garçon runs most of his routes. He's not a red zone guy or anything. Trent Taylor had a great matchup against Buda Baker. Buda Baker is a safety that's playing slot corner, and he's not doing very good at it. So Trent Taylor finishing with 61 yards and a touchdown is not really surprising. But the run game, if they have nothing going with the run game, this team is going to struggle, because you can't put everything on C.J. Beathard and expect him to keep the game close, especially when you're going to play the Packers on Monday Night Football. Like, this team is going to get slaughtered.
Yeah, now obviously Marquise Goodwin wasn't active, so that's probably their main passing weapon.
Him and Beathard, they haven't showed like much chemistry between those two, even going back to last year.
No, it's fair, and frankly Garoppolo is kind of what made Goodwin sort of the guy, but in the end he's still obviously a viable big play weapon, so it's certainly something which it could hurt at least Garcon's value. And George Kittle, you know, he continues to do work, you know, especially for a tight end, 7 targets, 5 receptions for 83 yards. So I assume Tags is in your must start territory. Does he above that line?
Oh, yeah. Like, when you get a tight end that's seeing as many targets per game as Kittle is, yeah, absolutely. It's that check down territory where Kittle's at. And he's pretty good after the catch, too. So, I mean, like, that's the thing is, like, you have a playmaking tight end getting, you know, 6+ targets per game. I think he's a must start. He's actually my number 8 tight end for the rest of the year. I'd rather have him than Kyle Rudolph.
Yeah, I think I might, maybe after this week. I think probably coming into this week he was behind him, but I think that's fair, because he is obviously involved, and, you know, Beathard really, really seems to be seeking him out, which is what we hoped for with the whole Iowa connection. All right, Tags, way to power through, buddy, even though you were sick. I loved it. You did a great job. And that's it for today's show. Before we go, I obviously just want to say a quick thank you again to the sponsor of today's show, Pristine Auction. Remember, they have a ton of great items up for auction every day, so make sure to check them out. Make sure to enter the contest for the Davante Adams giveaway.
Can I steal that helmet, like, so that we don't give it away? I'm sorry, guys. I don't...
Absolutely. All right, cancel it. Cancel the contest, everyone. I'm sorry, Tags is going to take it away.
Yeah, it's a full-size helmet with a visor and everything. The thing looks beautiful. Like, I'm not a Packers guy. Obviously, I'm a Bears guy, but the thing is gorgeous.
Yeah, it really is. Go to fantasypros.com/contest. It was a great Sunday, Tags. You did a great job. Way to power through. And on behalf of myself and Mike Tagliere, have a great Sunday. Enjoy your football. I just wanted you to watch me dissolve.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
Fire the grill and fire up the party. Get the Weber Searwood Pellet Grill. Smoke, roast, and sear on the same grill. Go from low and slow on smoke boost mode at 180 degrees all the way to high heat sear at 600 degrees. It's got a full grate sear zone so you can put more food on the flame. Food will look as good as it tastes. This grill is hot in 15 minutes and cleanup is easy. You can also add a heavy-duty rotisserie or rust-resistant griddle insert to up your game. Get fired up for your new Weber Searwood Pellet Grill.